1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you're having a great day today, whether you're listening live Saturday on News Radio 923 and AM 1620 or on the podcast version, wherever you get your podcasts, whenever you get your podcasts. Either way, we're going to make your day a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's happening in entertainment and pop culture. Speaking of the podcast version of the show, we would love to know if you're listening to the podcast version of this show. We do get some statistics on that, but I notice it doesn't seem to be tracking Spotify, and I got to imagine that's one of the biggest podcast providers out there. So if you're listening, and especially if you're listening on Spotify, let us know. You can email me at gopensacola@gmail.com. Would love to hear from you, just to hear what you think of the show, or just to let us know that you're listening. Make us feel like we're not just shouting into the void here. That would be very helpful. Joining me to shout into the void, as he does so very often on the show, please welcome Jeremy Branch.
Hello. Oh.
No,
to your point, hey, thanks for having me.
There's no echoes in the void, Jeremy.
Oh, that's actually very, very valid and very scientifically accurate of you.
There are no
thanks
echoes.
For having me.
There's only the void.
Julio mentioned the podcast. If you are not listening to the podcast version, head over and subscribe to the RSS feed. In fact, we do things a little bit different over there from time to time. Like, for example, there was recently a bunch of MCU casting in regards to the upcoming Avengers Doomsday movie. And so right after the news broke, we dropped an episode early. So sometimes you'll get episodes early. Sometimes you'll get bonus content. Definitely a lot of fun stuff going on over there.
By the way, in the time since we recorded that episode, Marvel has said in so many words, yeah, there may be more people in this movie. So,
of course there are.
Yeah, I was right. I can do a little, a little dance, but you wouldn't see it, which is a good thing because nobody wants to see that. Speaking of shouting into the void is now what the 12:30 a.m. hour Eastern time, 11:30 Central, is now on CBS or will soon be on CBS.
What?
They have announced this week that After Midnight is no longer going to be running. They're going to continue through the current season, which ends in June. And then not only is After Midnight done, but CBS is just not going to program that time period anymore. So they've been programming that time period going back to at least the 90s. That's when they had the Late Late Show started out originally with, was Craig Kilborn first or was it... Did they have Tom Snyder in that time period at one point? I think too. I don't know, but they've been programming that time period for some time, and then of course they had Craig Ferguson in that time period for quite some time, who was great, and then we had James Corden.
Fun show.
James Corden did that show for a long time, and then a couple years ago he decided he was done, and they just scrapped the entire Late Late Show and replaced it with After Midnight, which was kind of a retake on a show that had been on Comedy Central called At Midnight that actually aired at midnight. And the midnight was the at symbol. And it was kind of, comedians riffing on whatever was going on the internet and social media that week, but in a, like kind of a game show format. And the original show on Comedy Central was hosted by Chris Hardwick. And it was a good show. I watched that, I wouldn't say I watched every episode or anything, but I watched it pretty regularly. And
I enjoyed it and watched it often back then.
Yeah, ran for a few years, and they let it go, and they decided to bring that format back on CBS with a great comedian hosting, Taylor Tomlinson, who I absolutely adore. I think she's just one of the funniest people out there. And she messed with the format a little bit. They introduced a monologue and tried to make it feel a little more like a late night show and a little less like a game show, although it still had that game show kind of element to it too. Had a lot of interesting people on the show, both in terms of comedians and in terms of like CBS stars and things like that. They did, you know, they did a few episodes with like people from Star Trek, and you know, they had fun with it. And I think she was doing a good job with the show. And in fairness to her, and in deference to her, it wasn't canceled because she wasn't doing a good job in the show. To the contrary, like they had already said, okay, we're going to go for another season. And then Taylor decided that she was tired of doing the show, that she wanted, that she really felt like her talents were best used as a touring stand-up comedian, which in fairness, she's probably right. You know, she's an incredible stand-up comedian. If you haven't watched her specials, you absolutely should. If you don't have your algorithm attuned to her showing up in clips in your Facebook and Instagram reels or on your TikTok, you're doing yourself a disservice, because I mean, there's a lot of her bits that I watch them every single time they come up, because they're.
I'm gonna be honest, Julio. I'm pretty attuned to like what's going on culturally, and I became aware of this show probably around the time that it got announced that it was being canceled, and maybe even in that context. I know when I heard After Midnight, I was like, wonder if that's related in any way to At Midnight. And lo and behold, as you mentioned, it's kind of a spiritual successor to it. But as a fan of Taylor Tomlinson, as a fan of the original show, and as a fan of comedy, I think it's very surprising that I wasn't aware of it prior to this. But I think this speaks to the bigger thing that we're probably headed in the direction of, and that is just that, like, TV is, you know, I've been a cord cutter for 15 years now. I haven't had television in that long. So, like, if it's happening on TV, it's almost not happening in my life.
I get you. That's an interesting perspective. I got to say, you know, for me, did I watch the show? Yeah. But when I watched it, was I watching it live at, you know, 11:30 Central on CBS? No, never. No,
right.
At no time was I. I watched some episodes on Paramount Plus, because that is the right name for the app, right? Paramount Plus.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's, you know, that's where they'd go the next morning. And I, you know, I do have that service. I'm one of the you know, the 25 people that have it. Because that's where Star Trek lives. That's why.
It's a good streaming app.
Yeah. Other than that, you know, I watch in clips. You know, there's clips show up on YouTube, or they come up in Facebook Reels or whatever, and that's where I watch it. But I mean, for me, that's where I pretty much watch all of late night now. I consider myself a major SNL nerd. I can't tell you the last time I've sat down and watched a full episode of SNL as it airs.
Okay, so to point one, I watch it every Sunday. To point two, never when it airs. I still am that person who will watch the SNL episodes in their entirety, but I think you're definitely speaking to the broader audience in that you're probably watching a skit. You might be watching the monologue. Maybe you like the music guest and you see all that, but you do it on the internet the next day.
Yeah, I typically watch, and they've gotten to where they break down Weekend Update into like two or three different segments when they put it online. Which is,
that's annoying.
It's annoying as hell, but I still watch it that way. I like Weekend Update, and then, you know, I'll watch the sketches that are getting the buzz. And, you know, there have been some really great sketches lately. You know, I mean, the ones that I've watched probably 100 times is they've done two of them now. They did one a couple of months ago with Ariana Grande, where when she was the host and I think also the musical guest. And they're at a wedding, and the bridesmaids are doing a song.
The Domingo song?
Yeah, the Domingo song. And they're all intentionally singing bad, even though one of them's Ariana Grande. And they did this song that was based on Sabrina Carpenter's Espresso. It's hilarious. So then during the SNL 50th anniversary, they did another one that was supposed to be a vow renewal, and they actually had Sabrina Carpenter in that episode. And that one's even better. It's really funny. So it's not that there's not talent there, but, you know, I just don't know that that's the way people watch anymore. I don't know what's going to happen to late night. We'll see. But I think it's a shame that that they're not giving this format a go. And I think it's definitely a shame that Taylor Tomlinson's not going to be on TV regularly anymore, though I'm looking forward to more stand up from her. Got to take a break of listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Security, will you let me in your pocket? News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line. I love that song, and I want to play more of it, but I can't. Because they get a little naughty in the lyrics of that song. It's called Security. It's by Amel and the Sniffers. Go look it up because it's a great, great song. And if you haven't heard it before, then you may not watch the show that we're about to talk about, which is Invincible, which just recently wrapped up season 3 on Amazon Prime. And that song was used fairly prominently in, what was it, episode 5? Yeah, episode 5 of the new season. It's interesting because I think that that song was kind of representative of what was going on at the time in the show, but it's definitely not where we end up in that season. And I think it's interesting too, because you know, Jeremy and I were talking a little bit before we got into the segment here about the season of the show and the music in particular. I've always loved they make good choices with the music on this show in general. And I think it's kind of symbolic that the season started off with the song Go by the Chemical Brothers, which if you know that song, it's very much it's a club banger. It's one that's going to get the crowd going. It's, you know, high energy builds and builds and builds. And we started with that, and we started with this big, you know, like kind of classic training montage with Invincible. And that the season starts out there. Well, the season ends with Every Day is Exactly the Same by Nine Inch Nails. So if you know that song, if you know these two songs, you can get a feeling for, you know, how it started and how it ended up. Yeah, like what are the memes that the two, how it started, how it ended? The two pictures? Like those two songs, I think, definitely paint a musical picture of how it started, how it ended. Do you think that's fair?
Oh yeah, and I think it's a great observation, and I love that music plays a key part of the Invincible series.
Yeah, they do a great job with this show in general. I really love, you know, they're taking the storylines from the comics. They're doing enough of a spin on it for it to be a little bit different, while still following the basic story. There's some, you know, some changes here and there. I think most of the changes are actually for the better. I think, for example, they've made Adam Eve a much stronger character in the show.
Oh, she's awesome.
And I don't just mean that in a physical, you know, powerful kind of, in terms of physical power. I mean in terms of her power as a character. They've made her a more fleshed out, mm-hmm. more interesting character in the show than she ever was in the movie, or in the strip, the comic book. I can use words, really. I can. They've made little changes like that. One thing I'd completely forgotten that's a change from the comics to the show is in the comics, you know, there's this comic within the comic that Mark reads in the show. It's Seance Dog. And he's like, uh-huh. this anthropomorphic Jack Russell Terrier looks kind of like Doctor Strange. And he's a mystical character. I had forgotten until recently that in the comics, it's actually Science Dog. And he's kind of this, like, this super technical hero. Like that very, like, pulp adventure kind of character.
Sure.
And I when I realized that, I went and looked up, why is this changed? And it's because they've actually done spin-off Science Dog comics. And Robert Kirkman and Corey Walker, who are the creators of Invincible, and Ryan Ottley has a credit in there too, if I'm not mistaken. Although Corey Walker was the initial artist, then Ryan Ottley came along. They decided they wanted to keep Science Dog as a separate property in case they ever want to do Science Dog stuff.
Sure.
So theoretically, we could That's at cool. some point see a Science Dog movie or series or whatever. But they've also now created this other wholly viable thing that they could do. You know, Amazon Prime could easily do a spinoff Seance Dog series. And that would be totally vital too. And it's interesting because, like, over time, there are a lot of characters in the Invincible comics that have spun off to their own comics or just had their own comic within the Invincible universe. And it seemed like early on, we weren't seeing those characters. So then they were kind of holding them back. and they've started to introduce them now. So, like, I don't know if they've just decided, the hell with it. If we do anything, we're going to do it with Amazon, or whether they just decided they don't have the viability to spin them off into their own show or what. But characters like that we saw this season, like the Wolfman, the Astounding Wolfman, that's a character that carried his own comic. Britt was a character that in the past, in fact, was being remarked on. Hey, when they did this in the comics, Britt was there. They not only had Britt in this season, but they like gave him a name and a voice. So Tech Jacket is another one. So these characters that are in this wider universe, because the comics universe is pretty big, are starting to show up in the show. And I'm interested to see what that's going to mean. Are we going to build out an Invincible universe on Amazon? I hope so, because I really like what they're doing with the show. I want to see more of this. And there is a finite storyline to Invincible. The Invincible comic does eventually end. Kirkman's real good about that. That was true of The Walking Dead as well. But if you are a follower of The Walking Dead, you know that they went off in different routes with that show. And although they've ended the original show, what are there, 247 Walking Dead spinoffs currently airing on AMC?
That my current count. That is correct. 247.
Yeah. So, and I mean, we've seen a little bit of that in this season of Invincible as well, because the character Damian Darkblood shows back up in a post-credit scene in the last episode. And that's a character that appeared kind of very sparingly in the original Invincible story. So whatever they're leading to with what's going on with Damian Darkblood is new.
Yeah.
So they are veering off. And they have said, you know, they have established, obviously, and it plays heavily into this this season and last season, that there is a multiverse at work here. They have basically said the TV series is a different world in the Invincible multiverse than the comic book is.
Sure.
So
that makes sense.
That gives them the opportunity to go off in whatever directions they want to go off in. There's a lot of other things that are different. The relationship between Mark and Amber was different. Amber was a different race in the comics than she is in the show. There's been a few other characters that have been either, you know, race swapped, gender swapped, whatever.
That's probably the most important thing. We should hyper focus on that.
Well, you know, there are definitely people that will do that. I am not one of them.
We're not that show. Oh, dang.
I don't think one of those changes has been for the worse. And I have zero problem with them whatsoever. But what did you think overall of the season, Jeremy? Because we've kind of got off on tangents, and I want to hyper focus in now on this season.
No, we haven't gone off on any tangents. You went off on a tangent. I sat here politely and let you do it.
fair enough.
So Julio and I have been talking about this show since its inception. You can go back a couple of years and hear us talk about episode by episode breakdowns where we did get really in depth. I say that to say this is something that we've paid close attention to and followed. To get really, really broad, and then I'll kind of start to bring it back in and focus. Robert Kirkman is such a challenging, I think is the word. Like, if you are a listener, and if you're not, welcome to the show. We're glad to have you. Hope you will become a listener. We're both horror fans. I love horror and grew up watching it since a very young age. And at some point, even for me, there are things that cross the line into being disturbing. It doesn't happen often, and in a story like Hereditary, where it's very intentional and meant to evoke those kind of feelings, it doesn't bother me in the same way that it would in something like Terrifier 3, where it's almost like you're going there to watch that kind of material. And that's one thing about Robert Kirkman is, like, he skirts that line for me, where sometimes I feel like it just takes it too far. In an animated form in particular, that's a strange thing, right? Because it's not as if I've never seen violence before. And in something like Kick-Ass, where the violence was played for laughs, it's like, okay, you kind of understand what you're getting. But in Invincible in particular, there's like this really earnest, almost Spider-Man-like quality to the storytelling and to the way that we approach Mark's life and struggles. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side of that, there's this like hyper violent element. And ever since the beginning, I'm like, oh, that character should be dead. And then they don't die. But like watching in particular what happens to Eve at the end of the season is just, it's really difficult for me sometimes. Like, I don't know how else to articulate it other than I just find it disturbing. And I don't know that like that matches always with my sensibilities. I feel like there are episodes of The Walking Dead where it's just like, did you really have to do that? In particular, involving Steven Yeun. So like,
well, he gets his back against Jeffrey Dean Morgan in this season.
Oh, that's a good point, man. Yeah. That's a good point. So that's my broad take on it.
Yeah, that was intentional casting on Kirkman's part, by the way, to have Jeffrey Dean Morgan come in as Conquest and to give Glenn a chance to get some back.
That's amazing because of the way that it ends being so dang similar.
So as far as the season goes,
I really like it.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. And I think there's two levels that this works on. I think when it's on the level of like what happened to Eve, when you're seeing like some of your favorite characters get beaten to a bloody pulp or worse, you should feel bad about that. Like you should, it should turn your stomach. It should be hard to watch. You know, you should, that to me is a sign of good writing that you care about those characters, that it hurts. When it hurts you, when those characters are being hurt, and it did, it hurt. Right. What happened to Eve hurt? What happened to Rexplode hurt? What happened to Mark hurt? But the other side of it is the wholesale slaughter of innocent bystanders.
Uh huh.
And yeah, that should kind of turn your stomach too, and it does. But it does get to the point where at what point is it just gratuitous?
And even to your, like, I agree with what you're saying. Obviously, that's the intent. And obviously, if you get that feeling, that's what it's designed to do. But what if you could get that feeling by without having to do that? Would that be better or worse? It's just not Robert Kirkman. So I'm not going to say it's one way or the other.
Yeah.
It's just something sometimes that I'm like, man, that's a little much.
Yeah. But let's talk about it a little more when we come back. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line, and we are talking about the recently completed season 3 of Invincible that you can check out on Amazon Prime. That song plays a big role in one of the biggest tearjerker scenes of season 3, When the Party's Over by Billie Eilish. Just to put spoiler warnings up, it shouldn't be really a spoiler warning that anybody dies in any Robert Kirkman series, but we did lose one of the fan favorite characters this season, Rexplode. And that song played when he went out like a hero, went out like a champ. When we had this invasion of multiversal evil invincibles from other dimensions, he took one out by blowing up his own skeleton. and it was rough. And it was like, they totally led to it. They couldn't have done more of a, you know, it's my last day before retirement kind of thing with him.
Uh-huh.
Where, like, you know, everything was starting to go good in his life. He and Shrinking Ray had started a relationship, and, you know,
he says something along the lines of, yeah, I think this is the first time in my life that things have been going good for me. And you're like, oh, RIP, my guy, you're not making it out of this season.
Yeah, yeah, it's a little bit cliche, but damn it, it worked.
It does.
Yeah, everything this season was designed to and I want to go back to something you said last segment about Mark having a Spider-Man-like quality to him. And that's kind of basically where Invincible starts from. Basically, Invincible starts with the question of what if Spider-Man was Superman's son?
Ah, interesting. And that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically who Mark is. He is, you know, a guy that, you know, feels a lot of responsibility, has a strong family, you know, family ties, but, you know, just wants to make sure everybody's going to be okay. And he's a good guy that's being ground down and ground down. And part of the tension here is wondering when he's going to break. And I think to an extent we kind of see that happen at the end of this season. Where we leave off at the end of this season is Mark deciding that anybody that's going to hurt him or the people he cares about doesn't deserve to live. And that is a far cry from, you know, him trying to teach his younger brother that they don't kill.
But, and this is obviously also part of the thematic balancing act that Kirkman is trying to do, or his co-creator, I apologize, I don't know, what's his name?
Corey Walker and Ryan Ottley are the co-creators on Invincible.
So obviously he's trying to play with that, because at some point the collateral damage, it's like, okay, you have this moral code that prevents you from murdering this person. They turn around and kill 100,000 civilians. I mean, the death tolls are thought to triple over the next couple of days and weeks. It's like, holy crap, we're talking 250,000 people died from this. So, like, where's the moral quandary there? And yes, it's depicted as if it's supposed to be Mark going, dark mode or whatever, but at the same time it's like, what is a life worth? Is a life worth more than another life? Are lives equal in value to each other? Because by him standing by those morals and standing on that belief that he had, he cost countless people. So it's like, it's interesting that it kind of makes you ask those questions. Again, in an animated superhero story, I think those are pretty interesting themes to explore.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I think that's where Invincible has its strengths. It has its strengths in analyzing these moral quandaries. And, you know, we see that not just with Mark, but we see it with Cecil in this season. And Mark breaking with Cecil because Cecil is willing to work with quote-unquote bad guys.
Uh-huh.
In that, you know, they've made efforts to rehabilitate Darkwing and rehabilitate D.A. Sinclair and put them to work for the benefit of, you know, Earth, for lack of a better term.
They're like the CIA, but if the CIA's ultimate objectives were altruistic.
Are you trying to say we're not going to get into that. I'm sorry. I'm too Hispanic to get disappeared.
I'm not taking that bait.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I mean, one of the things I love about the show and the other thing is the character development, and those things go hand in hand. Like, these characters do develop and change and grow from season to season and from episode to episode. I mean, I don't think there is a single character that is in the exact same place they were when this series started. We have seen the change in Omni-Man as he has become, you know, as he's realized that, you know, he does not want to be a conqueror anymore. He wants to be a protector, and he wants to, you know, care about his family, and he misses his wife and et cetera. You know, we've seen the change in Mark's mom as she's, you know, become, you know, a stronger woman and standing on her own two feet. Definitely seen, you know, the changes in Mark and in Eve and all of the major characters. I mean, Rexplode. Rexplode would not, when we met Rexplode at the beginning of the series, he would never have sacrificed himself to try to save the world.
No, this season was definitely about building that arc out so that it could have this kind of ultimate sacrifice arc. And I wonder, and I'm not familiar with the comics, I don't know where it ends, I don't want to know where it ends, but part of me has to wonder, does Mark need some sort of ultimate sacrifice in the end for the greater good to complete this arc that he's on? I think that's kind of like the ultimate hero's journey, is one of self-sacrifice, because ultimately that's what it's really all about. And if there comes a moment that he's able to for the greater good, save the world at the cost of himself, I think that's like pretty powerful stuff. I'm not saying it'll go that way, but I like that idea.
Well, and we had a great episode this season that had, that went flashed back and showed us, Cecil's origins and how Cecil became who he is, and how he started out as a very, altruistic and, very black and white kind of guy. And over time, had to realize the shades of gray in the world and do bad things for the greater good. And while that was important to show the development of Cecil as a character, I also think it's foreshadowing. It is absolutely foreshadowing where Mark's going to go. And I'm not saying that based on the comics, I'm saying that just based on good writing.
Yeah, for sure.
Because I have not read all of the comics. I don't know the exact details of where the story ends. I've read, a good portion of the comics, but I haven't read all of them. So I'm not giving you
any
comic spoilers here. I'm just telling you that this is where I see it going.
Yeah. I agree with you. I think what I like about this season is it has this false ending in season 8, and then another button on top of it that in a way was very reminiscent of Man of Steel, and this destruction of entire cities and just leveling skyscrapers and all of that kind of stuff. So I thought it was cool that it can't get any worse, and then all of a sudden another Viltrumite shows up and you're like, oh man. And this Viltrumite, you mentioned his name, Conquest, voiced by Jeffrey Dean Morgan, he is just a brutalizer and drags Mark through so much and ends up what you think is going to murder Eve, and in fact, kind of does, but then she has this resurrection, Dark Phoenix moment, and unleashes her pure energy, and it was a really great scene. But I guess I acknowledge, especially after this season, that it really does borrow elements from a lot of stuff and wears those influences on its sleeve.
Well, I think to the contrary, I think you mentioned Man of Steel, and this is the first time this hit me, but Invincible is Man of Steel done right, because it's done without without the baggage of Superman, which the baggage of Superman is a good thing. Superman should be truth, justice, all that good stuff. He should be raised by the salt of the earth, and he should be a big blue Boy Scout.
Mm-hmm.
You can do with a new character like Invincible what happens with a Superman-like character in the modern world that's not raised by, the salt of the earth Kents, which is what Zack Snyder was trying to do in Man of Steel. But that doesn't work because, I've said it a million times, the first place Man of Steel goes wrong is not in getting Superman wrong, it's in getting Jonathan Kent wrong. And by making Jonathan Kent paranoid and distrustful, you take the character down the wrong path. It's not Superman. It's a fine movie for what it is, but it's not Superman. But Invincible's not Superman.
Point taken.
Yeah, so it works. Everything about this series works, and I'm just looking forward to the next season, and I hope it continues to succeed. We've got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out.
News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line. And Jeremy, we're going to shift gears now to another adult animated series that sometimes indulges in ultraviolence, and that being Harley Quinn, which just wrapped up its fifth season on Max. So you can definitely check out all of the episodes of that that now on Max. And I actually went through all the episodes in a day. So.
That's an extreme binge, huh?
Yeah, you know, I intended only to watch like an episode or two, and I just got sucked into the season. I have always really liked this show.
It's
think
fun.
It really is. It is a light show in a lot of ways, but I think that there's still a lot of heart to it, and there's a lot of heart to the characters. And I think that's really what keeps me invested more than anything else. That, and I just kind of like the off-kilter take that it has on the DC characters in general. And the fact that this show is not afraid to dig deep in the characters that it pulls out of the DC universe. Like a great example, we had a couple of episodes this season which featured the character Jason Woodrue, a.k.a. the Floronic Man. Kind of a deep cut character, although weirdly he's been adapted a fair amount. He was in the Swamp Thing TV series. He's been in a couple of Batman and Robin. He was in the terrible Batman and Robin movie played by John Glover, as a very minor role. And it is a character that in some versions of the story, and including this one, plays a role in Poison Ivy's origin. And I liked the way they played the character in this one, but when they first mentioned his, when I first realized that's where, because I kind of realized even before they mentioned his name, they're going to pull Jason Woodrue out of the hat, because I am that DC nerd. Yeah, I've got a pretty encyclopedic knowledge of, I'd say, DC comics up to maybe 10 years ago, maybe a little more than that, somewhere in that range. And I got a pretty decent knowledge of the stuff from the last 10 years too, but not as like, I can't pull like that from the last 10 years, like I can from, you know, pulling really obscure stuff out of my hat from before that. And it's like, you know, that's a fairly obscure character. You know, this is a character that started as the arch enemy of the Atom, when the Atom had his own comic, and the Atom didn't have his own comic for that long. So,
yeah, that's all news to me. I guess I should have assumed that he was a character from the canon, because like you said, they pretty much stick to that, and similar to what we've seen James Gunn do, they're not afraid to dig deep into the hat and pull out some characters that maybe they haven't used lately, and even the ones that they use that we do recognize are just done in such a unique and fun way. And as you've said in the past, and when talking about this show and others, they're still able to manage to hold on to a kernel of truth about who that character is, even in the most absurd circumstances, like with Bane and Clayface, and even characters like what's the shark? King Shark.
Yeah, dude Bane has become one of the best characters in this universe.
Hilarious.
Like Bane is so much fun, but like Bane has become, like Bane started off as this joke character that was just like, how do we make Tom Hardy's accent in Dark Knight Rises look even dumber? And his talking through the rebreather look even dumber. But like he has become like this like underdog character that you just kind of root for. And like to see the way that he has grown and like built a family, and like and you know, not only in this series, but this series takes up after the first season of the Kite Man Hell Yeah spinoff, and just like carries on stuff from that series like they expect you to have watched it.
I didn't.
Oh, you haven't watched Kite Man?
I watched a couple episodes, but I don't think I've finished it, so I wasn't.
You should watch it, because
I missed out on anything.
That was a lot of fun too, in the same ways, and carries over a lot of the same vibe without being the same show. It's definitely worth checking out. But like where we first see Bane in this series, like if you didn't watch Kite Man, you have no idea how he ended up with a wife and a kid.
No, I just kind of accepted it.
You just rolled with it.
Yeah, I mean, like, all right, he's got a wife and kid now.
I think that's fair, and I think you can do that. I think there's enough there. But I mean, like, if you think about the takes on these characters, like the Joker in this show, the Joker's still a bad guy and killed a lot of people, but this is still in a lot of ways like a kinder, gentler Joker.
It is.
That, like to the point that, like, you can see him and Bruce Wayne kind of being buddies in this season, and it's not weird. Like, it's okay. And it's worth pointing out, you know, we mentioned this show is, now that we have this new DCU building, the show is considered Elseworlds. It's not considered part of the standard DCU. And in fact, we've already established that James Gunn is a character in this show.
Yeah.
He did show up in as, you know, voicing himself in previous seasons of Harley Quinn. So James Gunn exists as a character in this universe. He's not running the DC films in that universe. Anything that stuck out to you as a particular highlight this season? I liked the switch of the focus to Metropolis. I liked bringing in some of the Superman characters. I think that was a lot of fun. I think it was interesting how they chose to write Superman himself out of most of the season. What did you think?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of fun. I guess our primary antagonist this season, I guess primary secondary is a little bit subjective, but you've got Brainiac as kind of the, you know, the super villain type deal. Obviously, there's some subversions of that that I thought were really cool. And his relationship with Harley's mom is pretty funny. And then I would say Lena Luthor is our other kind of antagonistic force in this season, which for me, I didn't watch Smallville. I don't read a lot of the comics. So that was like my first introduction to her. And I like the way that kind of like sibling rivalry, competitive being played into a lot of what happened this season.
Yeah, there have been different versions of that character over the years. There have been altruistic versions. There have been villainous versions. Obviously, this version starts out as putting on an altruistic air and turns out to not be so altruistic, and I think really is the true primary villain of the season, voiced by Aisha Tyler, who does a great job with it.
I didn't know that's who it was.
Aisha Tyler. And that's another thing. I think the show just does a great job in the voice casting in general. They always get just the right person for just the right character. Where they went with her was not where I thought they were going to be going with her, because as you may or may not remember, the actor who voiced Lex Luthor in the previous seasons, Lance Reddick, who, of course, you know, we know from Fringe and John Wick and, you know, so many other great things, passed away during the one of the last things he did was voicing Lex Luthor in the Kite Man series. And I kind of thought when Lena showed up and was taking over everything, I kind of thought we might have been leading up to a body switch thing where Lex had.
Is there a precedent for that?
There is a precedent for Lex Luthor switching bodies. There's not necessarily a precedent with Lex Luthor becoming female, but I think it would have worked for this show. I'm kind of glad that's not where they went, but that's kind of where, like, oh, this is not Lena Luthor. This is going to be Lex. And this is how they're going to get around Lance Reddick being gone. They've made Lex into a woman, but that's not where they went, and that's fine. Where they went with it was good. I liked the sibling rivalry. I liked them bringing Lex back in. I liked the new voice for Lex was fine. There was no real reason to necessarily end that character. It's not like, you know, it's not like Lance Reddick was on screen. I think it's okay to recast the voice actor. It's not, you know, I think that was fine. The heart of the show is the relationship between Harley and Ivy. And I think And I think that has become unshakable. And I think it really goes a long way to humanizing both of the characters. And I think they even kind of say it overtly in this series more than once. It's like, are we really villains anymore? I don't really like labels. You know, they're not really villains. And that's kind of the route they've gone in the comics too, that neither Harley nor Ivy is really a villain anymore in the comics. And
I mean, with motivations like Ivy's, it's really hard to call her a villain.
Well, yeah, it becomes, you know, it becomes like the whole, you know, was she right all along thing.
Right.
You know, which is something we've said about some of the best of the MCU villains, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, they're both still not afraid to, like, kill people.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, they're definitely not heroes. Maybe they're anti-heroes. I think that's probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
But yeah, just, you know, the incidental characters in this show, they always have so much fun, and it's always great to see them come back. I understand they are discussing a season 6, and I'm here for it. This show can run forever as far as I'm concerned. You know, I think Kaley Cuoco has done a great job as Harley, and she is an executive producer on the show and kind of a creative force behind the show. And I had my doubts about that when it was announced, but I think she has become every bit as much a part of this character as Margot Robbie or Arlene Sorkin have been.
I think in the best way possible, and not disparaging, again, in the best faith version, this is a light show, and it's really good to have one of those when you're switching between all of the heavy stuff. If you're somebody like me that likes a bunch of kind of darker television and movies and stuff like that, it's really nice to be able to pop this on and just kind of sit back and laugh and enjoy it for a little bit.
Well, we got to go for this week. We'll be back with more next week. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.